Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are undertaking what I think might be one of the most crucial deep dives for understanding modern America. We're tackling Howard Zinn's huge work, A People's History of the United States.
Yeah, and it's not just another history book, is it? It's really a fundamental challenge to how history is usually written.
Exactly.
So our mission today really is to unpack this this revolutionary reinterpretation, you could call it, looking specifically at the American story told, well, not from the top down.
Right, not the president's and general's view.
Not at all. It's told strictly from the bottom up, through the eyes of, you know, ordinary people.
And I think that perspective, that bottom-up view, is precisely why Zinn is still so relevant, so talked about. He gives you a kind of shortcut to understanding the U.S. that honestly you just don't get in standard textbooks.
He forces you to look past the usual narrative of smooth progress and really face the hidden history, as he puts it. The history of those who suffered, who resisted.
Workers, women, immigrants, people of color.
All those groups, yeah. It's about challenging that whole idea of American exceptionalism, you know, figuring out what history actually looks like when it's told by the people who often paid the price for progress.
The stakes feel pretty high with Zinn because he's going right at that core belief, American exceptionalism, which if you boil it down, it's this idea the U.S. is somehow unique, right?
Immune to the mistakes of older empires, morally superior.
Exactly. And Zinn just argues the opposite. He says, look, the U.S. is flawed. Deeply flawed in many ways, and its progress, when it happened, wasn't because of some shared moral consensus. It was because of conflict.
Okay, so let's talk about the man himself. Howard Zinn. Who was he? And what gave him the unique authority to make such a huge critique?
Well, Howard Zinn, born in 1922, he definitely had the academic credentials. PhD from Columbia, professor at Boston University for decades.
Solid academic background.
Totally. But his real authority, I think, comes from this mix of his background and his life experiences.
Yeah, I find his personal story really telling. He grew up working class, didn't he? Son of Jewish immigrants, Brooklyn tenement.
That's right. So that gives him this kind of instinctive feel for the powerless, you could say.
And then there was that big shift during the war.
Absolutely. His moral turning point, he started World War II as a bombardier in the Air Force, totally believing in the American cause.
Like many did.
Of course. But then later, he started researching civilian casualties, including from missions he flew on. And that led to this complete reckoning for him. It shattered his belief in the automatic moral superiority of U.S. foreign policy.
Wow. So his own experience wasn't just like background color. It actually became part of his method, how he looked at history.
You could say that. And it connects directly to his activism, too. He wasn't some detached scholar in an ivory tower.
No, he was right in the thick of it.
Deeply involved in the civil rights movement, teaching at Spelman, the historically black women's college, joining protests, voter registration drives. He was on the front lines.
So he consciously chose a side.
He did. He often said that neutrality in history is impossible, maybe even undesirable. He saw the historian's job as providing a corrective, you know, countering the official state-approved story.
Which makes his work both scholarship and a kind of political act.
Definitely. Rigorous research, but with a clear purpose.
Okay, that sets up his main argument perfectly then. Zinn's saying that traditional American history is, what, a sanitized, elite-centered version?
Pretty much. And that this version serves a purpose to legitimize the existing power structures. It does that by emphasizing unity, consensus, shared values, smoothing over the rough parts.
And then just throws that out.
Completely. He replaces that neat upward curve with an account that is just defined by confrontation. He insists conflict, class conflict, racial conflict, gender conflict, that's the real engine driving American development.
So the book takes you chronologically from 1492 onwards.
All the way through. Colonization, the revolution, industrialization, global wars, but always anchoring the story in the experiences of the exploited, the marginalized, the displaced.
Instead of, you know, great leaders making great decisions.
Right. It's about the people who bore the brunt of those decisions. And this leads to Zinn's ultimate goal, which feels quite different from a lot of history writing.
You too.
To empower the reader, really, to show that progress, real change, it has only ever come from resistance from below. It's the grassroots movements, people organizing against incredible odds. That's what forces change, not gifts from above.
Okay, let's dig into some specific examples, because this is where Zen really turns familiar stories upside down. Let's start with the founding, the American Revolution. We learn it as this unified fight for liberty against King George, right?
That's the standard narrative. Zinn's reframing is, well, pretty sharp. He argues the revolution, at least for the elite, was partly a clever maneuver. It wasn't just about democratic ideals.
Okay, so what else was it about?
It was also about the colonial elite solving a problem they had right there at home.
Which was class tension.
Exactly. There was a lot of discontent among poor whites about inequality, about the class system within the colonies. Zinn says the elite skillfully redirected that anger.
Away from themselves.
Away from themselves, their land, their wealth, their enslaved people, and pointed it squarely at the British crown. It was a way to get the poor to fight their war, essentially, while keeping the domestic power structure intact.
And the Constitution, then, follows that logic. We see it as this masterpiece of democratic compromise.
Zinn argues its brilliance was actually in protecting elite interests from the democracy they'd sort of unleashed.
Protecting property, you mean?
Yeah, precisely. He argues the Constitution was cleverly designed to safeguard property rights and elite interests from what they saw as the dangers of democracy. He points to figures like James Madison, who worried openly about the wealthy few being overwhelmed by the non-wealthy majority.
So things like Shays' Rebellion, where poor farmers revolted. The Constitution was designed to stop that kind of thing.
That's a key part of his argument, to suppress internal threats to the economic order.
Wow, okay. That connects the founding directly to class control. But if the elite needed unity against the British, how did they manage this diverse mix of poor whites, indentured servants, enslaved Africans? They were all being exploited.
Right, and that leads straight into Zinn's analysis of race. He makes a powerful case that racism wasn't just some, you know, unfortunate cultural thing. He argues it was a deliberate social construct engineered by the elite.
Why? What was the threat?
The threat was that these exploited groups might realize they had common interests and unite.
Which sometimes happened, like in Bacon's Rebellion back in 1676.
Exactly. Zinn uses Bacon's Rebellion, where poor whites and enslaved blacks did briefly team up in Virginia, as proof. The elite saw that, got scared, and realized they had to break that potential alliance.
And their solution was?
To deliberately create a higher status for poor whites, even if it was just marginal, giving them small privileges, slightly better legal standing, anything to place them above enslaved Africans.
So racism becomes a tool.
A calculated, incredibly powerful tool of social and economic control designed specifically to prevent solidarity and maintain the system.
Okay, let's jump forward. The 20th century. Zinn applies this same skeptical lens to U.S. foreign policy. We're often taught that America intervenes overseas to spread democracy or protect interests.
Zinn sees it very differently. He argues imperialism often serves primarily domestic purposes.
How so?
Well, things like the Spanish-American War, taking the Philippines. He shows how these overseas adventures could distract from problems at home, especially rising labor unrest. Plus, they opened up new markets and resources for economic exploitation, kind of like a safety valve for internal pressures.
And World War I, he famously called it a rich man's war fought by the poor.
Yes, and he highlights how dissent against that war was just ruthlessly suppressed.
Right, the Espionage and Sedition Acts.
Exactly. Those laws basically made it illegal to criticize the government or the war effort. Zinn uses this to show the state prioritizing its power, its war aims, over basic democratic freedoms. Radical challenges were crushed.
Like Eugene V. Debs, the socialist leader.
The most famous example, jailed just for giving an anti-war speech. Zinn argues this silencing of dissent wasn't an accident. It was a deliberate strategy to ensure the war machine could operate without opposition.
But even with that suppression, the resistance, the people power, it doesn't just disappear. Zinn spends a lot of time on the civil rights era. How does his focus on the grassroots change that story?
It changes it profoundly. He shifts the focus away from presidents and judges and puts it squarely on the ordinary people who risked everything.
People whose names we might not know as well.
Often, yes. He elevates activists whose stories really illustrate the sheer brutality used to maintain white supremacy, but also the incredible courage it took to fight back.
Think of someone like Fannie Lou Hamer.
The sharecropper turned organizer in Mississippi. Exactly. Her story, her testimony about the violence she endured just for trying to register voters. It embodies that grassroots power Zinn wants us to see.
So he's really pushing back against the narrative that change came mainly from Washington, from legislation passed by benevolent leaders.
Absolutely. He argues the establishment actually worked hard to contain and co-opt the more radical elements of the movement once it became clear change was unavoidable.
So the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, Zinn would see those as concessions.
Concessions forced from below, forced by years of marches, sit-ins, boycotts, organizing, people putting their bodies on the line. They weren't gifts. They were victories won through immense struggle and sacrifice.
That feels like a really important shift in perspective.
Yeah.
But okay, if Zinn explicitly says he's not neutral, that he takes the side of the powerless, how does he defend himself against the charge?
Yeah.
That he's just trading one bias for another, that it's just history from a different political viewpoint?
It's a fair question. His defense, I think, would be that all history writing involves selection, involves a viewpoint. He'd argue the traditional bias has been towards the elite, towards power, and often involves concealing inconvenient truths.
So his bias is corrective.
That's how he saw it.
Yeah.
And his rigor, he would argue, lies in his deep reliance on primary sources that traditional history often ignored or downplayed: court records from forgotten cases, letters from soldiers or workers, pamphlets from radical groups, diaries.
The voices from the bottom up.
Exactly. He's not inventing facts. He's choosing to center the facts that reveal conflict, exploitation, and resistance, because he believes that reveals a truer, more complete picture of American history than the consensus narrative does.
Okay, that framework is really helpful. So let's try to boil this down. If you take all these different historical moments, Zinn reexamines, what are the core themes, maybe the three big messages he wants us, the readers, to really grasp?
I think the first, and maybe the most central one, is that class conflict is the engine of American history. Forget consensus. The real story is the ongoing struggle between the wealthy elite trying to protect their power and property, and the majority fighting for wages, rights, dignity. That lens, for Zinn, explains almost everything.
Okay, class conflict is the driving force. What's number two?
Number two has to be his dismantling of the myth of American exceptionalism. He just hammers this point home with evidence, arguing the U.S. isn't uniquely moral or virtuous. Its history, he says, is filled with the same kind of violence, conquest, exploitation, and imperialism you see in other empires.
Like the treatment of Native Americans, the Mexican-American War.
All of it. He calls for a much more honest, less self-congratulatory look at the nation's past.
And the third theme, this feels like the more hopeful one.
It is. It's the centrality of resistance. This is the empowering takeaway. Zinn insists that real social change doesn't come from great leaders bestowing gifts. It comes from the persistent, organized, collective action of ordinary people pushing from below. Every right gained, every injustice corrected, was won through struggle.
That's a powerful message. And Zinn's writing itself is often really powerful, isn't it? He has these lines that just stick with you, that kind of encapsulate his whole philosophy.
Absolutely. His way with words is part of the book's impact.
Let's share a couple of those key ideas. What's one that really stands out?
I think we have to start with the one about why knowing this history matters. If you don't know history, it is as if you were born yesterday. And if you were born yesterday, anybody can tell you anything.
Oof. Yeah, that hits hard. He's basically saying historical knowledge, especially this hidden history of dissent, it's your defense mechanism. It protects you from being manipulated by those in power.
Couldn't agree more. And then there's this famous challenge to just going along with things. The problem in this world is not civil disobedience, but civil obedience.
Whoa. Okay, that flips the usual script entirely. He's arguing that just quietly complying with unjust systems or bad policies, that's the bigger moral problem, not protesting them.
Right. It forces you to question authority, but also your own role, your own potential complicity in things you might disagree with.
Okay, one more. Maybe something about individual action.
Yes. This one really speaks to anyone feeling overwhelmed or powerless today. Small acts, when multiplied by millions of people, can transform the world.
That's the core of the resistance theme, isn't it? It tells you that you don't have to be famous or powerful to make a difference. Being part of that collective effort, that tradition of resistance, that's what counts.
Exactly. It's about agency. Okay, so we've dug into the history, the themes, the quotes. But how does reading Zinn actually help us, like, today? What are the real-life applications?
Well, I think the most immediate one is it gives you a powerful tool for critical media literacy. Zinn's whole approach, it trains you to instinctively ask two questions whenever you encounter news or information, especially about politics, economics, war. First, Who benefits from this policy, this event, this narrative?
Okay, follow the interest.
And second, whose voice is missing from this story? Who isn't being heard?
That's huge. So if you're reading about, say, a new trade deal, Zinn pushes you to think beyond the official statements and ask, okay, who benefits financially? And what about the workers here or abroad whose voices aren't in this article?
Precisely. Or a story about military intervention whose perspective dominates. The generals, the politicians, what about the people on the ground?
That critical lens then feeds directly into the other main application, which is informed civic engagement.
Right. Because if you understand, through Zinn, that major reforms, civil rights, workers' rights, the New Deal safety net, weren't just handed down, but were won by sustained, often difficult grassroots pressure.
Then it changes how you think about making change yourself.
Right. Exactly. It shows that voting is important, sure, but maybe not enough on its own. It suggests that sustained advocacy, organizing, protesting, those are the historical levers that have actually moved the needle. It makes political action feel less like hoping for favors and more like participating in that ongoing struggle.
It gives you a different model for citizenship almost.
Yeah.
Less passive, more active.
Definitely. Okay, final thoughts. What's the one thing that really stuck with you or maybe surprised you revisiting Zinn for this?
For me, it's his relentless focus on how historical memory is shaped, how it's selected, the way standard textbooks will celebrate military triumphs but just glide over the human cost or minimize labor struggles. It really highlights how much is left out. Zinn's book feels like such a necessary, almost urgent corrective to that selective memory.
Yeah, that's a great point. My final thought for you, the listener, builds on that. It's the idea that Zinn's ultimate insight is actually incredibly empowering. Mm. He shows us that history isn't just a dusty collection of facts in a book.
It's something active.
Exactly. It's a weapon, a tool. It can be used by the powerful to justify the way things are, to make inequality seem natural or inevitable. Or, Zinn shows us, it can be seized by the powerless, by ordinary people, to understand their own situation, to find inspiration in past struggles, and to demand a better, more just future. And hopefully after this discussion, you feel a bit more equipped with that second story, that people's history. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by ICATRA Foundation.